died. 4 years later, after a crane on the platform collapsed, a piece of flying metal debris the size of a basketball nearly took his head off. In 2004, he was one of the few workers remaining on the rig when Hurricane Ivan slammed into the rig. With winds gusting over 100 miles an hour, and waves large enough to make him wonder whether to grab a parachute in case the rig collapsed. But there were other dangers as well. People slipped, hearts broke, and cuts and bruises were a way of life among the crew. Dawson had seen more broken bones than he could count. 2 plagues of food poisoning that sickened the entire crew. And 2 years ago, in 2007, he'd watched a supply ship start to sink as it pulled away from the rig, only to be rescued at the last minute by a nearby Coast Guard cutter. But the explosion was something different. Because there was no oil leak, in this instance the safety mechanisms and their backups prevented a major spill, the story barely made the national news and was largely forgotten within a few days. But for those who were there, including him, it was the stuff of nightmares. Up until that point, the morning had been routine. He'd been monitoring the pumping stations when one of the oil storage tanks suddenly exploded. Before he could even process what had happened, the impact from the explosion sent him crashing into a neighboring shed. After that, fire was everywhere. The entire platform, crusted with grease and oil, quickly became an inferno that engulfed the whole facility. 2 more large explosions rocked the rig even more violently. Dawson remembered dragging a few bodies farther from the fire, but a 4th explosion, bigger than the others, launched him into the air a 2nd time. He had a vague memory of falling toward the water, a fall that, for all intents and purposes, should have killed him. The next thing he knew, he was floating in the Gulf of Mexico, roughly 90 miles south of Vermilion Bay, Louisiana. Like most of the others, he hadn't had time to don his survival suit or reach for a flotation device. But in between swells, he saw a dark-haired man waving in the distance, as if signaling Dawson to swim toward him. Dawson struck out in that direction, fighting the ocean waves, exhausted and dizzy. His clothes and boots dragged him down, and as his arms and legs began to give out, he knew he was going to die. He thought he'd been getting close, though the swells made it impossible to know for sure. At that moment, he spotted a lone life preserver floating among some nearby debris. Using the last of his remaining strength, he latched on. Later, he learned that he was in the water for almost 4 hours and had drifted nearly a mile from the rig before being picked up by a supply ship that had rushed to the scene. He was pulled on board, carried below decks, and reunited with other survivors. Dawson was shivering from hypothermia, and he was dazed. Though his vision was blurred, he was later diagnosed with a moderate concussion. He recognized how lucky he'd been. He saw men with vicious burns on their arms and shoulders, and others bleeding from their ears or nursing broken bones. He knew most of them by name. There were only so many places for people to go on the rig. It was essentially a small village in the middle of the ocean, and everyone made it to the cafeteria, or the recreation room, or gym, sooner or later. One man, however, looked only vaguely familiar, a man who seemed to be staring at him from across the crowded room. Dark-haired and maybe 40 years old, he was wearing a blue windbreaker that someone on the ship had probably lent him. Dawson thought he looked out of place, more like an office worker than a roughneck. The man waved, suddenly triggering memories of the figure he'd spotted earlier in the water. It was him. And all at once, Dawson felt the hairs on the back of his neck rise. Before he could identify the source of his unease, a blanket was thrown over his shoulders and he was ushered to a spot in the corner where a medical officer waited to examine him. By the time he sat back down, the dark-haired man was gone. Over the next hour, more survivors were brought aboard. But as his body began to warm, Dawson started to wonder about the rest of the crew. Men he'd worked with for years were nowhere to be seen. Later, he would learn that 24 people were killed. Most, but not all, of the bodies were eventually found. While he recovered in the hospital, Dawson couldn't stop thinking about the fact that some families had no real way to say goodbye. He'd had trouble sleeping since the explosion, not because of any nightmares, but because he couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. He felt